97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, life after football for former NFL players. Our guest, Dr. Carla Thompson, who's the neuropsychologist of the Brain and Body Health Program at UNC, a program to assess health needs and provide medical care to former NFL players. What sort of care do you provide?
Comprehensive care. We have medical specialists in internal medicine, sports physiatry, sports medicine rehabilitation. We have a cognitive neurologist, a neuropsychologist, a registered dietitian, and a life skills coach who, as a team, provide comprehensive assessment of mental and physical health care needs for retired football players.
This is a program that's been officially going on for about a year. Is the issue surrounding head trauma, is that the major issue that you deal with, or is there much more to it than that?
There's much more to it than that. Certainly, pretty much every guy that we see has some concerns about the long-term consequences of a history of multiple concussions. But a lot of these guys also have issues with physical, musculoskeletal pain, concerns about their mental health, concerns about weight gain associated with no longer being part of the game.
We hear a lot of media reports about Junior Seau and other high-profile athletes who've taken their lives because of something related to multiple head traumas. Are the guys that you deal with, are they concerned about this?
They are absolutely concerned about that possibility. And one gentleman we saw recently actually said to me, I don't want to end up like Junior Seau. I think there are multiple issues. 20, 30 years ago, there wasn't much awareness of the potential long-term effects of multiple concussions. And the nature of the game was such that you hit hard, you hit often, and you're expected to shake it off. And the assumption was that there would be no long-term consequences. Research within the last several years, though, definitely suggests that for some people, having a history of multiple concussions places them at risk for certain forms of dementia. There is a specific newly identified form of dementia that appears to be associated specifically with repetitive head trauma. And a lot of the retired players we see are concerned about the possibility of developing that later in life.
We've seen that with some athletes who, former athletes, who it was later in life, 58, 60 years old. Javon Belcher wasn't that old. Most recently, Paul Oliver, the San Diego Chargers, 29 years old. So many of the guys that you're seeing are sort of in that age range, aren't they? 29, 30, up to 40 maybe?
29 is the youngest that we've seen through the Brain and Body Health Program to date. The oldest that we've seen through the program was a gentleman who was 58. We have seen other older retired players outside of the Brain and Body Health Program. The literature seems to suggest that most of the players who end up being identified as having had CTE had onset of symptoms in their 40s. I know that there have been cases after death when autopsies revealed pathological evidence of a disease thought to be CTE in much younger players. But what we really don't know yet is whether those younger players necessarily would have gone on to develop the symptoms of dementia, the cognitive and behavioral changes that we have seen in the older adults.
Athletes, as a general rule, tend to see themselves as invincible. Young people tend to see themselves as invincible. But these older former athletes, and even with some of the younger guys, if not them, then their families, are worrying at younger and younger ages, it seems.
Absolutely. And you have, within the last several years, had successful young players who have chosen to end their careers due to concern about the potential damage associated with additional concussions. The Brain and Body Health Program is actually structured so that spouses or significant others can accompany the former players to the evaluation. It gives them a chance to express their concerns and gives us more information about changes in mental health, cognition, or behavior that may be clinically significant. They don't participate in every aspect of the evaluation, but they certainly are an important part of the process. I would say most of the time we're able to provide reassurance and allay the family's concerns.
You have not only former players who have taken their lives, but you have several others who are involved in ongoing lawsuits. Art Monk, Tony Dorsett, Jim McMahon, some big-name people. And the formation of your program sort of coincides with the big lawsuit against the NFL with players charged that you knew we were going to have these problems. You didn't do anything about it. What are the, that being what it is, what are the good things? We hear a lot about the bad things. What are the good things that players are getting out of a program like this?
Well, as I mentioned just a moment ago, I think in many cases we're able to reassure them that at least this point in time, there's no evidence of any significant cognitive impairment or brain damage. Part of the evaluation process includes brain imaging. So we have a neurologist who will actually look at the brain scans and can identify anything that looks unusual or concerning. We do a comprehensive battery of neuropsychological tests that assess attention, concentration, memory, problem solving, language, visual spatial skills. It's kind of like the 10,000 mile checkup for your brain. And I would say the vast majority of cases, the results are essentially within normal limits. We have seen a small handful of guys for whom there is some concern regarding possible cognitive decline. But we also typically have some recommendations about things they can do to maintain their brain health as well as maintaining their overall health, and the opportunity to follow up with them in a couple of years to see if anything has changed. In terms of the comprehensive medical care, there are some specific medical diagnoses that appear to be really common in retired football players. A number of them are somewhat overweight and not necessarily managing their diet in the best way to maximize maintaining lean muscle mass and losing what they don't need.
Right. We'll continue our discussion with Dr. Carla Roberts right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about life after football and what several people at UNC are doing to help former NFL players deal with life after football. We're talking with Dr. Carla Thompson. Carla, just some numbers to throw out and to try to put the issue into perspective. In 2012... 261 diagnosed concussions in the NFL, preseason and regular season. A small drop, 228 in 2013, but that's a lot of concussions.
That's definitely a lot, and even though diagnosis and monitoring strategies have dramatically improved in the last several years, my guess is that those numbers underestimate the true incidence of concussions. One of the misapprehensions that many people have is that you have to have a blow to the head to sustain a concussion, and that's typically how a concussion is identified. But in clinical settings, and certainly in football as well, we see people who take pretty dramatic hits to their body. That can be associated with what we call deceleration injuries. If you're running really fast down the field and somebody stops you cold, your brain's going to bounce around in your skull quite a bit. And there's the potential for that kind of injury to be associated with transient alterations in mental status and not have that identified as a concussion on the field.
So a lot of current players, a lot of former players are now concerned about concussions more than we've ever been in the past. We had the $765 million lawsuit, former players, class action lawsuit, the NFL judge basically saying that's not enough money to cover all the possible former players who could be involved in this. So it's a big problem. Tell me if this makes sense. The better you are, the more likely you are to suffer long-term effects of concussion. You play in more games, you go to the All-Star games, your team goes to the playoffs, you have a long career, you play college and pro. Is there anything that says that the more time you've spent in the game, the more likely it is that you are going to have long-term problems?
That's actually a really good question, and the data at this point are not clear. One of the studies that was finished recently here at UNC was an exposure study. We looked at former retired professional football players, and age and education matched guys who played college ball only. So they were pretty well paired up, except for the number of years that they played. And they were matched by position as well. And so far, looking at the data, we haven't found any significant differences in their cognitive functioning. or their overall health. Now, it does make sense that the better you are and the longer you play, the more, you know, potential there is for you to sustain a serious injury or a series of injuries. But there may also be some protective factors associated with being a more skilled athlete.
Do you think, or have the data shown at this point, that there is any difference based on the position that the player played? You mentioned that sudden stop. That's going to happen to a wide receiver. That doesn't happen to a lineman, but he's butting heads with somebody on every single play.
That's another great question, and there are some data, but I'm not familiar with the details. So one of the important variables for us to look at is the position that guys played, and that factors into the equation. I don't know if we have enough information yet to be able to say that, you know, an offensive lineman is more at risk than somebody who plays a different position.
The guys you're working with right now, what do they say? What do they tell you? Are they fearful?
All of them initially will say that they're very concerned about the potential long-term effects of their concussion history. When we get into the nitty-gritty, though, often a small percentage will say, I feel fine. I haven't identified any things that are concerning to me. I just know that there has been research that says I may be at risk. And different people have different ways of appraising that risk. Some people are terrified that they are doomed to become demented. Others are pretty relaxed about the whole thing. And for those who aren't particularly concerned, actually for everybody that we see, we get a really good baseline on their current functioning. So their current cognitive functioning, their current mental health, their current physical functioning. We don't have a crystal ball. And there's always the possibility that that people we see now who look great may develop symptoms down the road. But in this case, we will have baseline information we can use for comparison. Family members are often more concerned than the players themselves and may have a different perspective on changes that may be just normal age-related changes in attention, concentration, or memory. But certainly as a group, they're concerned. And a number of the guys that we've seen are, in fact, involved in that class action lawsuit.
What do some of the family members say when the player who's trained to be a warrior and, you know, this is a collision sport, I know what I got involved in, I did it with my eyes open, at least somewhat open. Maybe they didn't quite understand all the potential ramifications. But what does the wife or the significant other say when a player says that?
When a player says that they knew what they were getting into or they're not particularly concerned.
And I think it's okay and I'm not really worried about it.
Sometimes the player and the wife are on the same page. When they're not, one of the challenges we face is that there are many reasons that a retired professional football player's behavior may change over time. A lot of these guys have some difficulty with the transition from being kind of larger than life, having superhero status, to being pretty much a normal guy. So depression and anxiety are actually quite common in the former players that we see. And depression and anxiety can also cause changes in personality and changes in cognition that the spouses see as concerning for an early dementing illness.
You mentioned also sleeplessness. Does that come with worrying about who I am, or does that come with the effects of the head trauma?
Well, it's probably multifactorial. There are probably many things that factor into that, and certainly problems with sleep are associated with clinical depression and significant anxiety.
We'll continue our discussion right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about life after football for former NFL players with our guest, Dr. Carla Thompson. Carla, we've heard in the past several months, former players, Jerome Bettis, others who have questioned whether they would allow their own sons to play this sport. We know that participation in Pop Warner football is down by about 10% over the past few years. Is it something that moms and dads really need to be concerned about? Because it is a collision sport, and no helmet can totally protect you from all possible head trauma.
It's definitely an issue that parents need to be well informed about. And we have, in fact, had some former players come through our program who have sons who are now playing collegiate ball or professional football. We've had other guys come through who ask, would you let your kids play football? And the answer varies with who you ask. We know that there are lots of retired professional football players and other athletes who played contact sports who have aged gracefully and are fine and have no significant evidence of any major issues related to their concussion history. So, you know, research has suggested, and certainly we're looking more closely at factors that may help predict whether an exposure to repetitive head trauma is going to be more problematic for some folks than for others.
What would you suspect might be some of those factors?
I think there are probably biological factors that relate to inflammatory responses to mild injury. All brains are different. All bodies react differently to injuries that may be very similar. One person can have a minor blow to the head that results in some pretty significant inflammation and swelling. Somebody else could have exactly the same blow and not have any identifiable problems. We don't know yet what those risk factors are. We also think that things like, you know, perhaps a history of learning disability or attention deficit disorder may be a marker for being more vulnerable to cognitive problems with repetitive head trauma, but we don't know that yet. And then there's research looking at how big your neck is and how strong you are and how fast you can run as potential variables that might also make a difference down the road.
I wanted to return to the idea of not just the head trauma, but the idea of you're not the star athlete anymore that you once were. And the effect that has on some of these guys, and your body has been your livelihood for X number of years. And now, for whatever reason, you can't keep up with those younger guys. The game has passed you by. You've had to say goodbye. How do the guys deal with some of these things?
It's pretty rough. I think a number of the guys we've seen have had career-ending injuries, who were in top form and were performing very well until something bad happened to them. And while I think intellectually they're prepared for that possibility, when it actually does happen, it's a very difficult transition. Others make the decision to leave the game because they recognize that there are health consequences or they're no longer performing at a level that makes them competitive. I also think, though, that there's a lot of variability in the extent to which professional football players see football as being essential to their identity. And we always ask, you know, what was the transition like for you? Some of them say, I miss the game, I miss the camaraderie, I don't miss the pain, I don't miss the training. I think it makes a difference if you were, if you ended your career on a high note and you can look back and say, I did good work, you know, I accomplished what I set out to, as opposed to maybe having played not as long as you had hoped to or as well as you had hoped to and having regrets about what you weren't able to achieve during the time that you were playing pro ball.
There's also the problem, the potential problem of your life has been pretty darn structured up to this point, and now you don't have the training table to eat at. You don't have a coach telling you you have to lift at this time and for this long. What about the loss of structure?
That is, again, a major issue for some guys. And that comes up a lot in our discussions about how they organize their life after football. Dietary habits. You know, they were essentially force-fed for a number of years in order to maintain a certain weight and body mass. Having to make decisions about when to eat and what to eat has proved to be pretty challenging for some of these guys. Having to make decisions about how you spend your time. Many of the former players we see are working. Some of them are not, and some of them planned well and don't have to work, but then are left with questions about how they should be spending their time. So they volunteer, they run nonprofits, but the lack of structure is definitely challenging for some people to adjust to.
And we're glad that there's someone like you and your colleagues there to help them through these years after they've retired from football. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Carla Thompson. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.